You're listening to Talk of Champions, an Ole Miss Spirit podcast with Ben Garrett.
Hello, friends. Welcome inside the Riverland Roofing Studios just off the Oxford Square. We've been building out this studio for weeks now. Still a work in progress, but I'm Ben Garrett, at Spirit, been on Twitter. Sitting with me, Walker Jones, was kind enough to come in and sit down, head of the Grove Collective, four-year starter for your Ole Miss Rebels in the late 90s. Team captain, just been doing so much for Ole Miss for so many years now. And I'm excited that you're the first one in here, Walker, because honestly, he could get by with our little like workshopping, you know, as we got wires in the floor. We got all this kind of, right? It's kind of comfortable. We're going to make it a nice Ole Miss hangout. I'll get like Raymond Collins. I think I'm lining up with him to Twitch next week.
There you know? You go.
Get that in there too. How are you, man?
Man, I'm good. It's good. Appreciate you having me on. And it's always great talking to you. It's a busy summer, obviously, you know, it was going to be busy anyway. And then our good friend, Judge Wilkin, Claudia Wilkin out in California decided to drop a bombshell at 9:15 on Friday night. And, approved the house settlement versus NCAA, which, you know, has kind of made these last couple days a little interesting. But, you know, we were prepared for it. And like I said, it was going to be busy anyway. It always is busy.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were prepared for it. And we had a bunch of contingencies in place. And we're going to execute and keep moving forward, bud.
Yeah, man. And I think one thing to kind of start it off, because there's so much to kind of unpack with it, is Ole Miss fans, the number one question at the Ole Miss Spirit, OleMissSpirit.com, affiliate of On Three, when I'm walking in the street at the celebrity softball game, for goodness sake, when we're out there in the Riverland party deck,
right,
watching y'all hit tanks. Well, not you. I think you could have hit a tank if you wanted to.
I could have. I was going to use my talents to make fun of people.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie. You and Matt McLaughlin, I told Matt this, man, like y'all's commentary during that made the whole thing. You know what I mean?
It was fun.
The whole thing. Yeah. And Austin Simmons comes up to me afterwards. He was like, man, I want to play in this when it's my turn. I'm like, that's kind of a cheat, isn't it? A little bit because exactly. Ben Van Cleve was hitting tanks. Yeah. Will Allen dented my crappy gosh, truck. Man. Yeah. I mean, come on now, but it was a really fun event, raised good money. And it's been cool to see how everyone's coming together for this, but the rev share piece, the number one question I've been getting is, man, like, what's the basics of it, right? Like, because a lot of people aren't in the weeds with it. I mean, you've made a mention of it before, man. If you went and asked the players who were plaintiffs in this dang thing, like maybe 10% would know something about
that's
it.
Right.
So for the Ole Miss fan that's like, Walker, you're the expert. Like, what does this mean in the short term, in the long term? Like, what problems does it create? Like, what's the explainer?
Well, you know, for our fans, I don't know how much they'll see a difference, really, to be honest with you. You know, behind the scenes, obviously, on the mechanics of it, the actual compensation, where the money comes from, some of the regulatory requirements that will be asked of us, you know, have certainly changed. But, you know, our fans really, you know, won't see a ton of difference in terms of how we operate. We still need Grove Collective members. We still need corporate partners. You know, the good thing is the university now can legally share it, revenue to the point of $20.5 million, which is the cap. They can't go over that. We were already spending more than that collectively as a total group, our sports. So that's where we have to come in and supplement on top of that that rev share cap with, you know, true NIL activations, corporate sponsors, brand activations. And, you know, that's where the support from our fans will continue. Again, the membership with the Grove Collective, where we can offer fan experiential type opportunities, tailgates, meet the Rebels, things like that, merchandise opportunities.
Riverland opportunities, coming out and hanging out with us here. Right, you know?
Exactly. The celebrity softball game, things like that. And then we've got a subsidiary marketing agency of the Grove Collective called Magnolia Sports Group, which we started last year in anticipation of the House settlement being passed. And that's where all our corporate activation is going to go. Our corporate partners like Riverland and others that are so generous to support us. That's where that commerce will live. So again, we want our fans, if you're a business owner, it's going to be really important for you to continue to give to us from a corporate sponsorship standpoint. If you're a Grove Collective member, subscriber, continue that membership. We're going to continue to offer cool opportunities around that. But that's where the new battleground is going to be. That's the new competitive advantage.
Right.
Now that the schools can kick in 20 and a half It's going to be what can we do to supplement that and augment that on top in real NIL, and we're really excited about it. You know, again, it's it'll change a little bit of the mechanics of it, but our fans shouldn't really sense a big change other than how we've been operating previously.
Yeah, and you mentioned too how I mean, I think everyone is relieved that there at least is some semblance of, hey, let's get some guidelines or guardrails in order. I mean, like, it creates a whole new set of problems.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, at least it's progress towards what everyone's kind of been calling for, because it's been the wild, wild west. But like in the short term, how difficult is it? Because, I mean, how do you regulate with something that's been completely unfettered for 5 years? You know what I mean? Because there's guys on deals that now, if it went to the clearinghouse under new rules,
Wouldn't
get the deal. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like putting the genie back in the bottle. You know, it's hard to do. And I have a hard time seeing a world where these agents and these athletes are going to accept making less money than they have in the last 2 or 3 years. Like, I don't know. I don't know what profession would be like, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I'm okay with making less money and doing the same job.
Right.
You know, so I think that's going to be the challenge. Again, the house settlement will solve for a variety of problems. It was needed to have some guidelines. It was needed for the schools to be able to actively take part in the rev share and not have it solely be based on the backs of our donors. So that's a good thing. But I also think, too, that we got to be careful about, you know, how much we want to regulate it, and knowing that it was not collectively bargained.
Right.
And there is no antitrust exemption. There are a variety of state statutes and laws that have popped up in direct conflict with the settlement. You know, like Oregon, they have a rule that says they don't have to submit their NIL deals to any sort of third party. So how's that going to go? Probably it's going to end up in the courts.
Right.
And so it'll take away some of the previous litigation, but it will create a new frontier for litigation. And as we all know, litigation's the change agent in really kind of any profession. And so it'll be interesting to see what that looks like starting July 1. I anticipate there'll be some legal challenges, and we'll have to work through that. And I think the other thing is, this is the first time we're all going through this. And so there really is no historical context on how exactly to implement everything. And so it's going to probably have to evolve. It's going to have to change. I seriously doubt a year from now, the settlement in its current form will look the same. Right. I think there's going to have to be – everybody's going to have to – kind of meet in the middle and go, okay, that was good in theory, bad in practicality. That actually did work. This we need to reassess. And I think as long as we do that, we get the adults back in the room, then I think we can figure out a way to get to a more sustainable model. So again, settlement much needed. I think the settlement ultimately would be a pathway to some form of collectively bargaining with the athletes.
Yeah, that's
because I think ultimately that's what's going to have to happen.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what I was going to get to. It's like it's spinning your wheels in a lot of ways. It's like it's progress for the sake of progress. But like at the end of the day, we all know, we kind of see where this is heading, like collective bargaining, you know, where this it's just like the NFL in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you've got two professional organizations at this point. And unfortunately, it took them 5 years to say, all right, let's maybe start to do something with this here. You know what I mean? And that's the part that's frustrating, I know, for you especially, because I mean, you've been calling just for something to know what the basis is. So for someone who's been in those in the trenches with this right for so long now, is this something that you believe is the right direction? All that kind of stuff. Like, do you believe this is there is guardrails needed? But I mean, again, there's so much to unpack now, right? Because like I fully expect the minute this takes into account, like goes into practice July 1, I mean, lawsuits are coming, like you mentioned. I mean, it's inevitable.
Yeah, the first time anonymous third party group says, hey, you're not worth that,
right,
to a student athlete, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to challenge it. And especially if it's less money than what they were making. So again, I think there's a lot of really positive things with the settlement. And overall, I was hopeful that it would pass overall. Now, when you peel back the layers and you start looking at all the different factors of it, I didn't love some of the things. I didn't love the Deloitte clearinghouse concept. I was more of somebody that thought that there should be a post-deal evaluation. And you sign up for an NIL deal, and the athlete's got to do this, 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 and this, and perform these obligations. And the collective or the agency has to do this, this, this. And then you, and then when the deal's over after 12 months, you look at it. Did they fulfill their obligations? Did we do what we were supposed to do? Did the athlete do what he's supposed to do? And also, too, by doing that, you get a sense of, did the athlete pay his way into a higher value? Mm. Diego Pavia last year, if you had looked at his value the first game of the year and compared it to after they beat Alabama, sure, in the country, his value went through the roof.
Right.
So if you denied a deal in August for him, you probably would have approved that deal in October. So there's no real, measure for an athlete playing his way into a higher value category, which is what I did at Under Armour when we were signing Jordan Spieth or Bryce Harper, right, or Tom Brady. Your value is dictated by your performance and who you are. And so that was kind of my own kind of concept on it. But I understand why they did it. They had to try something and start somewhere. I think another area that needs serious conversation that the settlement doesn't really address is an agent registry. Mm. I think right now anybody could go and say, hey, I'm an NIL agent. I'm going to go represent a bunch of 19.
And there's no one to say, no, you're not.
Yeah, I'm going to go represent a bunch of 19, 20-year-old kids,
right,
who are making more money than they've ever made in their life and have all this new world coming at them. And you literally don't have to have any sort of qualification to go give them what could be life-changing advice. So it's like I was telling the SEC, like, that's low-hanging fruit. Like, just go take the concept and the regulations for somebody to be an NFL or an NBA agent and apply that here. Hey, if you want to represent an athlete with an SEC school, you got to pass a background check. Mm. You got to have an advanced degree. You got to take a test, and you got to pay a fee, and you got to register.
That's basics. That's basic agency.
That's basic agency. Yeah. And because you are giving, again, serious advice to a kid and his family who are making money that could be generational to them. And so the fact that we don't have any sort of agent registry, I think, is just crazy to me.
It's inviting all the problems, the door opening doors to avenues that you can't regulate. I mean, that's how black markets start.
And it drives the price up more and more and more because right. These guys are just, hey, pay us more. And so I think, like, there are some of those things that we could tackle that wouldn't require congressional input, mm-hmm, or preempting state laws or antitrust legislation, which is going to take a really long time. And we all know how divided Congress is right now. They can't agree on anything.
Nothing.
So you think they're all of a sudden going to agree on collective bargaining
and student athletes?
When we're trying to figure out Ukraine and China and tariffs and Elon Musk and Trump and all that. I think
they up there at the food fighting, and we're sitting here like, guys, we just need some guardrails.
Yeah,
here,
just some basic guardrails. So again, basics. I think the settlement getting passed can be a pathway to a more stable and sustainable world, but it's going to require everybody getting in a room and literally putting aside their differences and going, okay, what's best for the greater good?
Yeah,
and hopefully we'll get there.
Well, you're going back to DC. You've been to DC before. What are those conversations like, man? I mean, like, when you're sitting down across from, I love Ted Cruz, right? I don't want to say other things for old Raphael here, but what are those conversations like, really, in regards to NIL and what are they asking you, right? Are they asking the right questions, or is it just, you know what I mean? What is that like for you?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've always loved politics. And
dude, you have the politics. Look, I totally think you could have been mayor.
I don't know about that.
Come on, bro.
I don't want to be a politician, but I love politics.
Kind of what you're doing, though.
Yeah, you know? a little bit. And, so it's fascinating to me to walk the halls and talk to our elected representatives and kind of see where they are, whether they're in the House or the Senate. Obviously, my former coach, Tommy Tuberville, is a current sitting senator, so I've spent a lot of time talking to him, and he obviously has a vested interest in this with his background. But they don't, what you find out real fast is those guys don't have all the context, and they're looking at these things on a macro level. Mm-hmm. And they're also looking at it going, is this good for me to take a stand on? Mm-hmm. Is this going to help me get reelected 2 years or 4 years from now?
Because if nothing else, politicians in these United States of America are working to get reelected. That's the whole term limits. Anyway, keep going.
No doubt.
That's what it is.
You find out real fast, 5 minutes in, okay, where are they headed? What is really on their mind? What are the the topics that mean the most to them. And so, again, I think it's fascinating. I have long been a belief that, look, congressional intervention needs to be limited. You know, the old statement, hey, we're from the government. We're
that's
here to help.
Very conservative of you, Walker. Yeah. God, yeah, that's crazy. You like, you know, limited government. I didn't know that that was something still people that believed in. Yeah, it shocked exactly. me. You know, what do we do?
But you know, it's like Ted Cruz made the statement, you know, when I was testifying 2 years ago, he's like, I don't think we need to be judging the transfer portal or targeting or, you know, things like that. Now, I think there are some federal issues that they could weigh in on. Title IX application, does it apply or not? Employment, which is the 300-pound elephant in the room. Are they employees or are they not? Which nobody wants to answer that question.
Which is insane because they are.
Which is pretty much what they are. And then the antitrust piece of it. And so those are those bellwether big federal issues. It's hard for other people to solve those without some sort of congressional oversight. But there's a reason why there's been all these congressional bills and hearings and nothing has gotten out of committee or to an actual floor vote. It's because it's so much to try to take into consideration. And, you know, again, my thing to our elected leaders is, look, you know, limited involvement, but maybe some involvement on some sort of special status for the athlete that would allow some limited collective bargaining. Maybe not full unionization, but would allow some form.
These damn union busters, man.
Well, you got to understand the Big Ten, their geographic footprint is all union. Where the SEC is not. So it's geography plays into a fact. You know, Tony Petitti, the chairman or the commissioner of the Big Ten, has a different set of problems on his hand than Greg Sankey does. Because, you know, the SEC doesn't have as heavy of a union input as the Big Ten does through the Midwest and the East. So, so again, you have to look at all those nuances in there, but maybe there's a middle ground where, hey, there's a special status in there that doesn't require for full employment or full unionization, but does allow for some form of collective bargaining. Or some form of binding contracts or some form of athlete registry that would add some sustainability there. So, again, my commentary has always been that is there a role there? Possibly. Is it reality to think they're going to get into all the rabbit holes that exist in the collegiate sports model? Absolutely not. And can, in my opinion, the Power Four commissioners are probably the most logical governing body to fix this. Those Power Four commissioners are the ones that can get together and could, pardon the pun, collectively solve some of these issues and get us on a better path.
Yeah. It's interesting because again, I didn't even think about that piece and you've talked about the layers, but really until you really get down deep in those weeds, you don't understand like what you just said, like the problems for one commissioner are totally different for the problems for another. Yeah. There's no uniformity to it. And this is a step in, I think in that direction, but in the short term, what you're saying though, from Ole Miss fans who have been giving, Ole Miss fans who want to give, how things have been working at least for the last handful of years, it pretty much stays the same for now.
Yeah, it does. And that's what I want our fans to know. They should take even more comfort in knowing that things are getting a little more you know, normalized with the settlement.
When the pitch goes up high in Walker's voice, you know, he's like, we're being blessed today. We're saying thank you, God, for this opportunity go and what all the problems are, even though we're touching on all the problems.
That's right. Well, and again, like I said, I don't think our fans will see a massive difference in how we operate. There will be on our end and with Keith and our OMAF, Ole Miss Athletics Foundation, the athletic department, the collective, you know, will behind the scenes operate a little different and the mechanics will be a little different. But to the forward-facing fan and to our donors, it'll look pretty similar. Now, a lot of our major donors will be given to OMAF. But the two buckets that we still need are going to be our membership with the Grove Collective and our corporate sponsors. Because that's, like I said, that's going to be the new battleground. Our fans have trusted us. They believed in us. They have seen the impact. I mean, we probably haven't had a greater year in Ole Miss Athletics ever. And I would think a lot of that is the coordination of what we've all done together. So that's not going to change. And I think our fans should know that if they continue to give in those areas, they're going to continue to see this type of success.
That's what's insane, man, is that I remember the old days. You do too. You played for it. And like just the idea that Ole Miss would win 10 games in a regular season was like so lofty and just like crazy. Like,
to be mad about it.
Yeah. And to be upset with it.
Can you believe we only went 10-3?
And I'm like, I remember when Eli won all but one of his SEC games that year, maybe it was two, but like in losing to Memphis and Texas Tech in the same year that they almost went undefeated in the SEC. Yeah. And to me, I was you didn't even worry about the Memphis and Tech and Texas Tech losses against BJ Sims when he's thrown for 630 yards because Ole Miss had never been in that place before. And it doesn't need to get lost, I think, that in, despite this uncertainty and despite how, like in old days, Ole Miss would not have handled this well. There are other schools that have struggled to really get in this new environment. Ole Miss has been proactive. Ole Miss has been front leading. You've been one of the most instrumental parts of that. And I think, yeah, like you said, man, when you remember what it used to be and you see now, it takes some time to appreciate that Ole Miss, man, good grief. The fact that everybody came together, that's just something you didn't see. You know what I mean? And they're winning at an unprecedented clip everywhere.
I think you're 100% right in the sense that, like, we think back to where we weren't as coordinated and we weren't as efficient. And, again, like, I've told the story hundreds of times, but, you know, 3.5 years ago when I first got the phone call from Lane about, you know, taking this thing over and getting involved in it, you know, the first question I asked was, are we all on the same page? Is the chancellor and Keith and our coaches and our foundation all on the same page? And for the most part, they were. And I'm like, well, if that's the case, then we can figure this out. As long as we're not fighting over, you know, dollars, we're not fighting over relevancy, we're not fighting over, you know, who should be doing what, and we're all trying to do to figure out a pathway to a greater good, then we can be successful. And that's what's happened to your point. And again, everybody's like, when the house settlement hit on Friday night at 9:15. I was like, oh,
perfect
my gosh.
Time. What
are we like, there goes my weekend. But everybody's like, oh, my God, what do we do? I'm like, we do what we've been doing.
Right.
We continue to communicate, and we stay really coordinated, really efficient, and we had planned for all these contingencies. That's why we started the Magnolia Sports Group to be the sports agency for the collective. We started that a year ago in anticipation of this thing being settled. So we weren't caught off guard, and that's what I want our fans to know is that this – was all a part of the process of us continuing to be a leader on the national front. And again, I don't think there's any coincidence on why we've been successful on the field, on the court, and we've been successful in the fundraising game, in the collective game, and we're going to continue to do that. And that's why we need people to continue to give and continue to trust us to put us in the best position.
And for those of you watching on YouTube here on Talk of Champions, powered as always by Riverland Roofing, we're coming to you from the new Riverland Roofing Studio. Still a work in progress. Wires everywhere, but man, it's a comfortable space and a cool space. It's hopefully going to be the best online Ole Miss hangout for you. We're going to do Twitch streams and stuff at Talking Walker. And if you're watching right now, you've seen a couple of graphics, including the FPI predictions from ESPN FPI, where Ole Miss has, I think, the, where is it? Yep, seventh best of the SEC teams to win the SEC next year, including you know, other teams who return a lot more. And it kind of speaks to the point we're getting at here. Ole Miss is replacing 70% of the starting lineup for Ole Miss, starting 22, I should say. And yet they're still in the playoff conversation. You know what I mean? It's a different world. Yeah. I remember when my dad raised me to say, like, Ben, Ole Miss will never recover since Peyton didn't come. Then Eli showed up. You know what I mean? And you're down on the field for Meet the Rebels when they used to have it on the field. He said, go get that sign, that guy to sign your stuff for, because Eli had come home. And you had to wait for some, like, act of God, right? Or, like, Archie to have another one, right?
Yeah.
For Ole Miss to win at that level. But now, because of the commonality and the unification, both from an administration standpoint, fans, everybody. I mean, $100,000 raised for the celebrity softball game is an
incredible. Together.
Threw it together. It was 2 weeks. I just think it's a different place, and like, that's a good example of it. I mean, you were old days replacing 70%. Like, oh God, give us 2 or 3 more years. You know what I mean? And we'll be back where we go. And this is not how it is anymore.
No, I don't. And I think, like, I love the fact that people are kind of sleeping on us a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, now again, seventh highest odds in the SEC ain't anything to sneeze at.
No.
You're in the top half of the league. Right. That's good. But, like, again, I think that as I look at our team and working with Billy Glasscock, our GM, and Lane and the coaching staff, like, I really love what we have on campus right now. Mm-hmm. We've got now we lost some great players, obviously, in Dart and Walter and those guys. Great players.
All I thought watching the NFL draft, Walker, is like, damn, how did they lose to Kentucky?
I know. You weren't the only one.
We walked through the IPF the other day, and they had their, like, in the IPF, if you don't know this, every game, the football team, they sign a block for the games that they win, and they stack it, and then they frame it up. It's a really cool thing that's on the wall for every team to be remembered. And walk it through, and man, it looked really good last year. You know, 10 wins, you got great wins, man. Like teams, blue blood wins that would have made a season in years past. And then the first thing, oh, where's the Kentucky one?
Yeah.
Where's the loss to a real estate agent at quarterback? Where's the Florida one? You know what I mean? That's all I could think. You lost great players, but also.
Yeah. But, you know, and look, I think that was tough. If you look back at that team, I think being preseason top five and the expectations, I'm not saying we couldn't handle those. I'm just saying that was a different world we had not been in a while. And all that attention. And then you start with those four cupcakes that we just mauled those first four games. Probably wasn't the best thing. We probably needed this year's schedule last year where you get tested early.
Yeah.
You kind of get punched in the mouth. I think by the time we got to week five, that Kentucky game, man, we were bulletproof. Like, oh, we're just beating everybody. We hadn't been stressed.
You'd never seen an offense struggle for Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin.
No, and we hadn't been hit in the mouth.
Right.
We hadn't had any adversity. And then all of a sudden, bam, it hits us right in the face. And so I think, you know, looking back, you know, that was problematic. I think this year's team kind of being a little under the radar is a good thing. And also getting tested early is going to be a good thing for us. So I love the culture. I've met with the team a couple of times just on, you know, administrative stuff behind the scenes, and very respectful, very gracious, humbled, but motivated. And I think the standard Lane and the staff have created a standard that, hey, man, 10 wins, we ain't happy with that, you know, and we're here to win championships.
Like, if y'all are pissed, they're way
more pissed. Oh, absolutely. The guys coming back.
Oh, fire.
Diego Pounds and Sun Terrian and these guys that were great, Caden Lee and some of the great players we have coming back, like TJ Donner, they're like, man.
TJ told me straight up, walked in
here. I can't play Kentucky fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like what TJ walked in here to Riverland when we were doing like something like not, I mean, a couple weeks ago. He's like, first of all, he went off on the Kentucky game, what happened, this, that, and the other. And then he goes, and also, I can't wait to play Kentucky again, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to win the Butkus Award. It's just a different frame of mind.
Yeah, they are motivated.
It's different.
And then it's culture. You walk in that building, and it just feels different. So I'm really excited about it. I'm excited. Our basketball team, men's and women's, are going to be phenomenal. Like, I went to the first practice on Monday to watch our men's team, and, man, we're big, long, athletic, great kids. We're in the middle of rebuilding baseball right now. Softball's retooling with Coach Trax on her group. Obviously, our golf team. You know, we're going to go see Lasasso and Tankersley play in the U.S. Open tomorrow.
Awesome.
I mean, like, geez. I mean, this is – I mean, we're having so much fun. And I hope our fans are too, because it's working.
Yeah, it's got to be rewarding for you too, because I mean, you're in those trenches every single day, taking all them calls all the time. So if you weren't getting rewarded with some wins, I'd feel bad for you. Ooh, you? If you weren't getting, I'd be like, I really feel bad for Ole Miss fans. I really feel bad for Walker, because I don't know what he's going through.
I'd be calling Billy, going, "Hey, you need any new roofers? Are you anybody?" Yeah,
But Bill can. Walker's ready to get on a roof now. All right, so a couple questions real quick before we get out of here. Reb Guy 22, is there any way for local businesses to advertise with the Grove Collective for a donation?
100%, absolutely. Right. So reach out to us. There's a corporate sponsorship landing page on the website at thegrovecollective.com. William Evans, who works for us, manages our corporate sponsorship program. So you can shoot us an email, give us a call. We can tailor anything. The great thing about what we have is there's a lot of autonomy. There's a lot of flexibility and creativity that come with it. So we can really structure whatever you're looking for. We were on the phone with two corporate partners yesterday that are new, that are putting together their sponsorship to use athletes to market to our members. So yes, that's the cool thing about it, is we can really dictate and design something that's specific to your business. So reach out to us. Hit us up on social media, on our website. We'll get right back to you.
Any outreach to current NFL Rebels for donations?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had, Dante Moncrief has been a great supporter. Dawson Knox has been a good supporter for us.
Kidding.
He's not only financially supported us, but he sends us jerseys all the time. He's helped us. Eli Manning did the event with Jackson Dart last year for us, that Riverland sponsor.
Yep.
We had Dexter back for the celebrity softball game.
And crazy good out there, too, man.
Like, he looks like
Jamin made a ridiculous catch.
Jamin made a great catch. But like, TD looked great.
I asked Dexter, I'm out in the outfield because our stream, you know, the Wi-Fi at Ole Miss, You're trying to steal Wi-Fi, a little spotty. So after a while, I just said, I'm just going to drink some silver bullets. So that turned into me yelling out at Dexter, you know. And I was like, Dexter, you played before? He's like, no, this is my first time. I'm thinking, that's how he's a different athlete.
That's why he's a great athlete.
That's how he is.
Yeah, so we're always going to work to get our former and current professional athletes back. We've got obviously a great crop of new NFL athletes with, what, 8 or 9 guys got getting drafted, a bunch of free agents. Those guys are coming back and working out this summer. Dart did something for us the other day. So we're going to continue. I think we have a great relationship with those guys because we took care of them. We paid them every penny that they were contracted to get. We helped them build their brand. So I think they have a good feel-good allegiance with us. So, yes, we will continue to do that for sure.
Can you name the starting defense from your last Ole Miss defense team captain?
Oh, wow.
This is Ben Garrett's question. I said I was going to ask you this. I told you this on the phone. I said, I've got one question for you.
Yeah. So can you safety, remember? So Ronnie Hurd.
Hell yeah.
Timmy Strickland at safety. You had Gary Thigpen at corner. You had Malika Griffin at the other corner. You had me, Brock Kreitz, and Nate Wayne at linebacker.
God, that's salty.
Yeah. You had Mitch Baker at defensive tackle. You had Anthony Boone at defensive tackle. You had defensive end. You had Derek Burgess.
Hell yeah, you did.
And Andre Harrison at the other defensive end.
Like it was nothing, bro. Like it was.
Wait, hold on. Derek Burgess may have been tackle. Derek Burgess started tackle.
And then moved out to edge.
He started tackle that year with Mitch Baker. And then we had Andre Harrison and Johnny Jones from Batesville. Sal Pinole was our other defensive end.
Man.
I need to get that straight because I see Johnny every now and then.
Yeah, and you totally gotten caught on it.
Yeah, so we had two former South Bay, Malika Griffin.
Yeah.
And
who was guarding Randy Moss in the Motor City?
Malika Griffin.
Yeah.
The first play.
First play. Because I was there.
Yeah, after that, we changed the defense after Malika said, I'm gonna challenge this.
Hey, he tried.
He tried.
He took his shot.
He took his shot.
It is Randy.
It was Randy Moss.
And I'll never forget because it was Christmas time in Detroit, man. And again, just talking about how different it is. If you went to the Motor City Bowl now, people go, oh, I'm not going to the Motor City Bowl. We're supposed to be.
We couldn't have been happier. We thought we were playing at the Orange Bowl.
I'm saying.
We hadn't been to a bowl game because of probation. So, like, we get to Detroit. We're playing Marshall. Who's that? And 2 days after Christmas, we couldn't have been happier because we hadn't been to a bowl game.
And it was amazing. And we packed that thing out. Yeah. Like, all the fans showed. I remember we drove to, like, with my family. We drove to Michigan.
I remember my family was all there my last game to play. And we won 8 games that year. If we won 8 games tonight, we'd be playing in the Outback. Yeah, and we were shipped us to Detroit. We couldn't have been. We were like, this is great.
Like, I remember the old story, like the old joke was, man, why the hell won't the Peach Bowl just put us in there one time? You know, for like 20 years, they would never put us in there.
Never put us in.
Yeah, now it's just like Peach Bowl, like, we've had an Ole Miss enough. Randy gets that one big play. What'd y'all switch up defense to? What'd y'all do?
Well, we started pressing him. We put Tim Strickland, who was corner. He was their safety. We put him at corner because he was bigger and he could press Randy. So we put him on Randy. Put another safety in, Jason Klingon from Pontotoc, Mississippi. Put him
right up the road for me, baby.
Put him in a safety, and then we ran a safety over the top. So we kind of bracketed him, double teamed him,
shut his ass down,
and we shut him down. I think he only caught like one more pass after that.
He did. Now the first play was awesome. I'm not gonna lie, right? Randy just came out and did that.
We're like, ooh, boy. He's pretty fast. Oh.
Walker Jones, he's the head of the Grove Collective. Thank you for coming in here. This is Talk of Champions in the Riverland Roofing Studio. Still a little bit of a work in progress, but we had to get it off the ground. So excited for what it's going to be here. Going to have Walker and events here at Riverland to for the Grove Collective, for NIL, for all number of things, and we want you here. So Walker Jones, thank you, my friend. You're the man. Go enjoy Congress. Tell Ted Cruz.
I'm sure all of those fans want me to tell Tommy Tuberville something. I don't know if it's hello, but they want me to tell Tommy something.
I mean, honestly, I had him on the podcast twice. I love Tommy Tuberville. He's an insane person to talk to. He's awesome to talk to. He's fun as hell.
He's good.
I'm saying is you go in there and you say to Tommy, hey, Tommy, I just did an Ole Miss podcast. They just wanted you to know we still got your pine box at the end.
And they want you to come back on.
Yeah, come back on.
And help run for governor.
Yeah, governor of Alabama now.
That's right. Imagine that.
If I'd have told Walker Jones back in the Motor City Bowl, hey, your former coach Tommy Tuberville, the next 20 years is going to be the governor of Alabama, you'd be like, that him?
Hey. It truly gives weight to the saying, you can be anything you want to be.
It's true. He's Walker Jones. You're the man. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Oh, that is so good. Oh, that was so funny. Tommy Tuberville, baby.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.